Recently, the Biden administration was setting out to remove a statue of William Penn in Welcome Park, which is in Philadelphia, the city that William Penn created in the state that is named for his family. Pennsylvania stands for Penn's Woods. It was actually named in honor of his father, Admiral William Penn, and the crown, that is Charles II, owed a debt to Penn. And so he gave all this land to the son. And William Penn was a great Christian man who created this large colony, which he called a holy experiment. He hoped it would be the seed of a nation, which indeed it did become that. And it would all be based on Christ's golden rule, as articulated in Matthew 7:12, along the lines of treat others as you would like them to treat you. William Penn had exemplary relationships with the Native Americans and with others, even with whom he may have disagreed with them theologically. Well, fast forward to today, because all that I was just talking about took place in the 1680s and so forth. William Penn's statue was going to be, as I said, taken away, and instead they were going to put Native American displays there in Welcome Park in Philadelphia. Thankfully, there was such a hue and outcry against this move that they relented for now. I even wrote a column about this, and we linked to that in this. But one of my favorite guests when it comes to America's Christian heritage is Bill Federer. Bill Federer of AmericanMinute.com. Has written many books, including America's God and Country, plus Miracles in American History, which he co-wrote with his wife, Susan. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Bill Federer joins us again. Bill, great to have you back on.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be with you.
Sure. So, Bill, first of all, I want to have you comment on this recent story about, oh, yeah, we got to take down that statue of William Penn and instead put up a display in honor of Native Americans, but of all people to target, William Penn? I mean, my goodness. And then we'll talk about the whole issue of, is there a war on America as founded? I'm going to sit down and relax and let you wax eloquent on these thoughts.
Well, it's a process called deconstruction, where you say negative things about a country's founders so people will emotionally detach from them. And then you get them into a neutral where they don't remember where they came from. And then you brainwash them into whatever future you have planned for them. During the French Revolution, they tore down statues of good King Henry IV and dig up the bones of St. Genevieve. And around Mongolia, the Chinese are pulling down statues of Genghis Khan because he was Mongolian and not Chinese. And whenever Muslims would come into a country, they would destroy all the history before it, rename the streets and tear down churches. And so this process of deconstruction has been taking place in America. Now, William Penn, it's interesting, he was Quaker, and the Quakers were the ones who pioneered the anti-slavery movement. So if you want to know, out of the entire world, where the anti-slavery movement began, it was the Quakers. And in Pennsylvania, there was a Quaker named Anthony Benezet, and he begins to teach black children.
Okay, wait, can I stop you for a second? So the Quakers then influenced ultimately William Wilberforce about a century later, because he's doing his work in the late 1700s, and you're saying that the Quakers were the first with the whole pro abolition movement, and then that ultimately would have influenced Bill or William Wilberforce, right?
Is that right? So 1688, which is like 5 years after William Penn founded Pennsylvania, you have the first anti-slavery petition. It's called the Germantown petition. And so these Quakers began to, they outlawed slavery within Pennsylvania. Anthony Benezet was a Quaker who taught black children. And then he started the first anti-slavery society in America. And eventually Ben Franklin became the president of it. But he wrote books on the horrors of the slave trade, which were read by even Patrick Henry. And he said, after reading Bezanet's book, I could no longer defend slavery. And And he said it was really tough for him because he had owned slaves, and he says that he now realizes, you know, what a terrible thing it is. And so it was a movement. It was sort of like, you know, the Uncle Tom's Cabin, but only a century before that. And people would read Anthony Benezet's books. And then you had John Wesley, and he began to condemn slavery as the villainy of, you know, the most outrageous thing. And then you had the Methodists were an anti-slavery Christian denomination. And then it began to spread to the other denominations. But it started with the Christian Quakers, and that's William Penn. And his history is fascinating. You alluded to very important points. But you had England, and it had King James. Everybody's familiar with him. And then King Charles I, who was the epitome of a divine right king, that God chose him to be the king, and he demanded that everyone in the country believe exactly what he did, or he would persecute them. And so there's a civil war in England. The Puritans actually win and chop Charles I's head off. The son, Charles II, flees to France. The king of France, Louis XIV, was a cousin. And then after Oliver Cromwell dies, the English Commonwealth starts to fall apart. His son Richard can't keep it together. And guess who goes over to France is Admiral William Penn, the father of William Penn. And he puts Charles II on the boat, takes him back to England, and helps install him back into the monarchy. And so that's where Os Guinness said that the covenantal ideas failed in England. They brought the king back. But in America, we were able to develop these covenantal ideas. And he said that the Constitution is a secularized form of covenant. And but Admiral William Penn brings King Charles II back. And in return, King Charles II knights him. So now he's Sir Admiral William Penn. And then they're having a big coronation in the, they're in Westminster, and who's there but Admiral William Penn and his young teenage son, William Penn. Now, William Penn, while the dad was an admiral at sea, a Quaker, Thomas Lowe, had visited their big estate in Ireland, and the Northern Ireland was controlled by the British. And Thomas Lowe, this missionary, begins to tell young William Penn about the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. And that it's religion is more than just state doctrine, believing what the king tells you, or he's going to burn you at the stake. It's a personal relationship with God. And young William Penn said it was at this time that the Lord began to give him divine impressions of himself. And but then, you know, that Thomas Lowe leaves and William Penn pursues his career. And here he is with the dad, and he gets to be a student at Oxford. He's a cavalier. He's a big man on campus. His dad's friends with the king. And there's a Quaker professor there who gets banished from the campus, and he's holding meetings at his home. And young William Penn starts visiting the meetings, and they get raided by the police. And they're arresting all these people because they're not Anglican. And they see young William Penn. They go, "Kid, what are you doing here? Get out of here." And they put him out without processing him, right? And then he begins to have little Bible studies in his dorm room, skipping the chapel service. And he begins to talk about the rituals and how they don't, you know, mean anything if because it's not, you know, led by the Holy Spirit. Anyway, he begins to criticize it so much so that the dad is embarrassed. Young Penn gets expelled from Oxford. The dad threatens to disinherit him and sends him over to France. Says, "Look, just get out of the country. You're causing trouble." But over in France, he meets different Christian leaders that talk about tolerance, and this affects him. And then he goes back, and he's going to be a good boy and go to law school. And then the Dutch-Anglo War starts, and then he actually accompanies his dad on the boat. And he becomes an emissary, taking messages back from the dad to the king. I'm here to see the king. My dad's got a message for him. It's like, "Oh, yes, come on in." And
just so you know, we have about 4 minutes left. But it sounds like William Penn was very enlightened by any criterion you want to use. So what do you think about this idea of taking down his statue and instead, you know, putting up some other display? And they were going to, by the way, they were going to take down that statue and that was it. There were no plans for doing anything with that statue of the man that founded Pennsylvania and Philadelphia and really did it in a very mode of tolerance, treated the Indians well, and as you said, you know, was a pioneer even against the slavery and so forth. So we have just a few minutes left. This war on America, it's an amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's a part of his life that I wanted to get to that helped to complete the picture.
Sure.
So the dad wins the Anglo-Dutch War, but he comes back. There's the Plague of London in 1665, and then there's the Fire of London in 1666. That's when, you know, Sir Isaac Newton has to leave London, and he sees the apple fall from the tree and comes up with the theory of gravity. Well, during this time, this young William Penn sees the Quakers on their errands of mercy, taking care of people, and he sees the anti-religiousness of the religious, and they're like, stay away from me, you got COVID, you know. And so then he begins to frequent these Quaker meetings, and the dad threatens to disinherit him again. He's in a collision course with the king, and then the dad dies. And he, by the way, young William Penn gets put in the Tower of London, and he's you know, that's usually where you die. And the Duke of York, New York's named after him, he became James II. He intercedes and gets him out of jail. And then the dad, as he's dying, begs the king to have mercy on his son. And the dad dies. Young William Penn wants to take his inheritance and buy a little slice of West Jersey to bring Quakers to. And Charles II counters and said, look, I owe your dad money, but I don't have money. So I'm not just going to sell you West Jersey. I'm going to give you 45,000 square miles and make you the largest non-royalty landowner in the world. And this young Penn could have lived like a king, but instead he opens up to do this holy experiment to see if Christians of different denominations can live together in the same geographic area. So in Pennsylvania, you had Quakers and Presbyterians and Baptists and Anglicans and Catholics and Jews, and they're all coming.
And German Dunkers.
Yeah, and so this is why they all felt comfortable going there for the Continental Congress. One of his writings, Penn said that he believes God will have his colony be the seed of a nation. And sure enough, it was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that they have the Declaration of Independence written, the Constitution written, the Liberty Bell rang, became the capital for a short time. And then the first anti-slavery society was started in Philadelphia. And so it is ironic that here's this person that we're pretty much in debt to for our country and for the anti-slavery movement starting, wanting to take his statue down. It's like it makes no sense to those that are pushing that agenda, but they don't care. The big picture for the deconstructionists is just completely separated from our past. Why? Because they want to push a new People's Republic of China version of America.
That is amazing. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being with us. We do have about 1 minute to close if there's one last thought you want. AmericanMinute.com. If these people are successful, it isn't just a matter of historical statues being torn down, is it?
Right. Interesting. So Penn said that if there was a incident between a farmer, a settler, and the Indians, there would be a trial with 12 in the jury, 6 Indians, and 6 planters. And there was even a planter that had killed an Indian, and they had the trial, and they sentenced him to death. And so the Indians were like, this William Penn guy, he's fair. And so Pennsylvania did not experience the Indian attacks that took place in places like Virginia and so forth. And then William Penn insisted, even though the king gave him the land, he insisted on buying it from the Indians at a fair price. Instead of like New York, where, you know, Peter Stuyvesant traded some glass beads to the Indians for Manhattan Island, and they didn't really even know what he was talking about until it was too late. No, William Penn made sure that they understood. And so he's just a great example of treating people fairly and tolerance. And again, it gave birth to our country.
AmericanMinute.com for more information. Thanks, Bill. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.